Hello and welcome to this Drama New South Wales podcast. Today we are talking to Kathleen Rourke and we're talking to her about primary school drama and also her wonderfully innovative ideas. Kathleen Rourke is a fourth year classroom teacher working in rural New South Wales government school and part of the 2023 Fast Stream cohort. She was the only primary teacher to receive a 2022 Commonwealth Bank Schools Plus Early Career Teacher National Award and has pioneered new data and research-informed teaching in her classroom to help her students to gain greater understanding of achievement. Kathleen is completing the Data Champions course with Selena Fisk to reduce the amount of data for data's sake that happens in schools. Her experience is in years 3 to 6 and Kat is leading her colleagues to implement structured literacy across the 4 year 5-6 classes at her school this year. She's a passionate advocate for primary drama and is currently promoting drama as a perfect subject to develop oral language and reading comprehension. We welcome the wonderful Kathleen.
Thank you so much for having me, Claire. It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's so exciting. Okay, so let's start off with your primary school teaching journey. Where did you start out and how long have you been teaching?
So this is my fourth year of teaching and I've been in rural contexts. So I actually started as a Teach Rural Scholar with the Department of Education and I started out at Cootamundra Public School. So I spent my first 3 years there. This year I have been, I've joined the Fast Train program with the department. So my placement has been at Jindabyne. So another regional context, but quite a different setting to Cootamundra. But I'm a high achiever, let's face it. That's what I'm like. And so I've done quite a lot. I'm just finishing up my Master of Education at the moment in Language and Literacy at La Trobe University with Pamela Snow and Tanya Seri. So I'm a big science of reading advocate these days as well. And last year I was lucky enough to win one of the Commonwealth Bank Teaching Awards for early career teachers. So I was one of the 10 recipients of that. So I've done a lot.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. I feel so privileged to talk to you today. So teaching in a primary school setting. I'm a secondary school teacher and teaching in a primary school setting is completely foreign to me. So can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, like your day as a teacher and then a little bit about what it's actually like teaching drama in the primary school setting?
Yeah, so for us, it's usually, every school's different, of course, but often what happens is your first couple of hours is generally a literacy block where you're teaching reading and writing as your sort of core business of the day. Then it's often mathematics after that, usually hour and a half, depends again on the school. And then in that other time that you've got, you're fitting in geography, history, science, all of the creative arts. It's PDHPE. And you're doing that around carnivals and all of the other things that happen. So Jindabyne's been a fascinating setting because we only actually have had 4 teaching days a week in term 3 because our children at Jindabyne go and do snow sports as part of their primary experience through kindergarten to year 6, which is pretty incredible. So you have to be very, very clever with how you're integrating content across all of those different teaching areas. For me, with drama, because often what happens in a primary school is people look at the syllabus and they look at those, the creative arts syllabus and they go, okay, well, term 1, we're going to do visual arts. Term 2, we're going to do dance. Term 3, we'll do drama. That's how it often happens. And that's okay to a certain extent, but it's not enough drama for my liking.
So,
it's all very well to sort of teach the dramatic discipline for a term, but then I always like to be integrating it. And the thing that I particularly love doing with drama is I love getting it into my literacy block. So one of our big focuses in terms of using the science of reading and what we know about how the brain learns how to read is teaching reading fluency, because it's very, very important. It's a huge predictor of whether or not a child will be able to comprehend what they read, because if they're spending all their time trying to lift those words off the page, they don't have any brain power left over to actually understand what they're reading. But part of reading fluency is not just that speed and accuracy, it's also the expression and the prosody and getting that meaning from the text. And so a really easy way for primary teachers to incorporate drama and dramatic techniques is to actually include reader's theatre as part of their fluency practice, because that means that students are having to listen really carefully, they're having to track, and every child I've done it with has just absolutely adored it. And because they're performing it in front of their peers, it's building all that performance skill as well. It's still ticking off your literacy outcomes because you do have to integrate a lot in primary. But you also, they're focusing so hard on those words. So this term, I've just come off the back of a novel study. And I incorporated Reader's Theatre every second week as part of that. And I was taking all the dialogue from the text. So it was coming lifted straight from what we were doing in class. And they are so focused on getting the words right, for example. Yeah. So there's quite complex vocabulary in there, like superfluous. And I had a student who was really struggling. He's, you know, he's a lower reader and he was really struggling with superfluous. And he had to practice and practice and practice. But he will not do that kind of practice for straight reading fluency, for example. Wow. When we're doing choral reading, which is where we're all reading aloud, or echo reading, where they're reading a line and we're copying it, for those other fluency routines that I have. But when it came to actually performing it and doing it as part of Reader's Theatre, he was so focused on making sure he had every line correct. And that's the case across the board with all of my students. And that's the thing about drama, is it brings out that creativity and energy and passion that you 100%. Don't get as part of your regular literacy block all the time. You need those different elements to be really working together.
And it's engaging students in very different ways. So we might have the same students in secondary setting across different disciplines, like in English, and then you put that same student in a drama room and they're different children, really. So amazing. So have you done a production or a big performance with your primary school?
No, I've not had the opportunity because I started my teaching career, I mean, being fourth year, I started in 2020. So that was, you know, a really interesting time to start teaching. Yeah. My school was actually going to be doing a production in 2020 and it got put off and it got put off. And my current school, Jindabyne, has not got a primary school production running. They've got a really strong high school drama department, and they did High School Musical as a production, which was fantastic because our students all went and got to see those performances, the primary school students, because it was a central school. It's just actually separated into primary, secondary this year. And there's a new campus being built and all sorts of exciting things happening. But they got to go and at least see and be part of that performance and see, you know, the high school students performing. So, but I haven't actually had the opportunity to run a production yet.
It does sound like you're doing enough anyway. So to be a primary school teacher, you have to be trained in all different areas. How come drama was your go-to area?
Oh, just because I love it. So I guess, and also I have to say, the Drama New South Wales team was just incredibly welcoming as well. I went along to a couple of events and conferences because I was interested, and everybody's just been so beautiful. I was a bit sad I couldn't make it to the conference this year. But I think it's, you know, you follow your passions, and I've got a really strange set of passions. You know, I'm obsessed with literacy and the science of learning, but equally obsessed with drama. And then the other thing that I love is data. I've just got a really weird skill set and I just tend to follow my passions. And the other thing is, you just see, I've always loved public speaking as well, personally, and I love bringing that out of my students, and there's just no better way to do it than drama.
So, just a quick question. Being in a secondary setting, we have year sixes that transition into year seven. What can we do to support our sixes into sevens to succeed at high school?
Yeah, I think you guys often have a bit of a bum deal in a lot of ways in high school if we don't send them to you strong from primary. It's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about the science of reading and about making sure every single child is going into high school with the literacy and numeracy skills they need to succeed. Because obviously you would see that in every single subject, including drama. And the mental health issues are what get me, because I have students in my class, for example, who I was told at the start of this year, year sixes, year fives is the class that I've got at the moment, had, you know, mental health issues and anxiety and things. And when I've dug down into the root of that, they do to a certain extent, but really what's sitting underneath that was low-level literacy skills in particular. You know, if you're sitting in a classroom, I said this about, you know, some of our, well, say this about a number of students who this has come up for in different school contexts and friends and things. If you're sitting in a classroom for 2 hours in a literacy block in the morning feeling like you're stupid and you can't do any of the work, of course you're going to go out into the playground and thump someone. Yeah. Or of course you're going to have serious anxiety about school and school refusal. So the first thing is us in primary making sure we're sending them to you really strong, because as high school teachers, I feel so sorry for you because you don't get specialist training in literacy. Yeah. So how on earth are you supposed to support those students? I've taken a lot of inspiration from Rachel Jacobs' work around working with EALD learners, because those thing about those teaching techniques that work for that group, it's like what works for special ed. It actually works for everybody. So for me, it's always about setting up the conditions for every single child to be successful as much as possible. So hopefully we send them to you strong, but I guess that's not always going to be the case, and schools are at different points on this journey into using the scientific evidence base to make sure every child can read. Mm-hmm. And there'll always be a small percentage of, you know, hopefully no more than 3-5% who are going to struggle. But I guess it's about finding that in and working with your primary school counterparts to do that, because we are often the specialists in that area. We want to be asked. And I do speak to a lot of primary colleagues who are trying to get their high schools on board and trying to work with them. And it doesn't always work. And I know we're all busy. But I guess, you know, from my perspective in primary, we always want to be asked, you know, we always want to help set them up to succeed. I think a really an interesting movement in the space that I'm in literacy is called Sharing Best Practice, and they're conferences, and they're always low cost and on a Saturday. And the one I'm going to in a couple of weeks in Ballarat, there's a fluency intervention that the year 7 and 8 teachers at the local high school have been working with the primary school on to make sure that reading fluency is really carrying through into high school, so that the students are getting the same routines, they're using the same literacy screeners. So I think as much as possible, like there's a literacy screener called Dibbles, for example, that'll give you a really strong indication of the level of risk that a child has. So you sort of think of Dibbles as similar to a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a thermometer. Okay. So if you take your temperature using a thermometer, it's not going to tell you why you're sick, but it's going to tell you if you're getting sick or if you're running a bit of a fever. It's that kind of indicator. And it can be really, really useful. It's, you know, it's hard to run all these sorts of interventions in high school, but that can give you a bit of an in high school, and that runs K-8, which means if you're lucky enough to be near a primary school that's running something like that screener, you could be getting their screening data from 5-6, and then you could be running that through to 7-8, so you'd have that consistent kind of tracking. Yeah. So I think, you know, always reaching out and seeing if you can make those kinds of relationships work.
And in a world where data is so important now, to have that pre, and then also for us to kind of track that student then through to, let's say, you know, year 9, year 10, that's incredible and amazing for our subject area to actually look at how we are implementing and improving literacy and developing that along the way. So thank you.
Well, I mean, they say, you know, I hear from my high school friends, it's, you know, every teacher is a teacher of literacy. But I think that is especially true in drama, because you have the opportunity in drama to develop fluency, for example, and all of those sorts of reading skills in that subject, and those performance skills and confidence building that you don't have in every single subject. Like, literacy looks different across all those subjects in high school, but you have that amazing opportunity in drama. And I feel like drama has this unique opportunity at the moment to really position themselves as, hey, we're actually huge bang for buck in terms of developing literacy, because I just, you know, it's often the performing arts and the creative arts that get cut first thing when people are starting to narrow the curriculum down to literacy and numeracy, and it's absolutely the wrong decision to be making. But, you know, we've got to make sure that we're advocating for drama as, you know, a key point of developing literacy for students in a safe and welcoming environment where they can be successful, and often in ways that they haven't had the opportunity to before.
So you mentioned earlier on about Reader's Theatre and using that in your classroom. What other tips? I mean, I've been teaching for a very long time, so I think we just kind of go through a whole range of different things, but I'd love some advice of some other literacy activities that we might be able to use with our students, or pinpoint as literacy activities so that we can then develop further.
Oh, you're going to have to give me a moment to think of that one, actually. Okay, so there's, I think, probably three things come to mind. So the first one would be echo reading. Now, echo reading is a routine that comes from Timothy Rosinski, who's a fluency researcher and specialist. And I think it's actually been in the literature for a little while, but that's where I came across the idea, was in his mega book of fluency, which is fantastic, by the way. So in that, Rosinski talks about echo reading is where one child is reading, for example, a sentence of a text, and everyone has to echo it back using the same expression. So it means you can play with different voices, you can play with character, you can play with expression. Now, where I implement it in my fluency instructional routines, it happens once they're quite familiar with the text. So in my instructional routine, on day one of a fluency text, we do a tracked read. The tracked read is where the student has to track with their finger or a ruler, against the text as I'm reading it aloud. So they are hearing fluent expression and fluent reading. And because they are tracking, I don't know why we take away tracking. Don't take away tracking, keep the tracking. Everyone tries to get rid of their fingers and rulers. No, we have so many students with tracking issues. Please keep them in. So we track with the finger or the ruler. They're hearing that. Then we do what's called a choral read. A choral read is where they are matching my pace and I'm reading the text aloud in a big voice. They all have to read it aloud along with me. And that means they're getting used to that language. Because the thing about language is, which is not, you know, an idea that I was familiar with until I did my master's, language is, or literally, if we think about it, there's this idea about from evolutionary biology from a researcher called David Geary. And it's this idea that spoken language is biologically primary. Now, what that means is we've been speaking and listening as humans for several hundred thousand years. We have actually evolved structures in our brain to do that, to be able to learn to speak and listen in any language. And that's true across all languages. We've only been reading and writing for a few thousand years, and certainly not widespread until free education in the 1800s onwards. So our brains have actually not evolved to do that. To be able to read, we actually have to completely restructure our brains. We take parts of our brains, and Stanislas Dehaene, who's a French neuroscientist, he's actually been able to demonstrate that regardless of which language you learn to read in, the way that you restructure your brain as a strong reader is the same for every single reader. But what we have to keep in mind for reading and writing is they are biologically secondary skills. They have to be explicitly and systematically taught because we are literally changing the structure of the brain for a child to be able to do that, which is a pretty phenomenal idea when we think about it. So because you've sort of got to keep that in mind, what you always want to keep in mind is that oral language is what you want to build on. So if you can do it orally first, you are then building up from that into the reading and writing. So that's why I do so much of that work in terms of the tracked and the choral reading, because then when they go to, in my fluency routine, they then go to partner reading. On the second day is when we do the echo. By the time they get to the echo, they've had about 10 reads of that text and they've had so much oral work around it before we then do that echo reading. And that's what I mean by setting them up for success. They've had it multiple times, so they've all got the opportunity to succeed. And, you know, I sit my students in such a way and I look at the text so that when they're doing the echo reading, my students who need that little extra confidence boost, they're getting a simpler sentence in the text, or they're getting, you know, the words that I know they're more familiar with.
Yeah. So being able to differentiate with the kids that you need to.
Exactly. And obviously my higher readers, they're getting the more complex sentences in the text. So I tend, as much as possible, it doesn't always work, but that's how I set them up to succeed. So definitely that. Having drama-themed brain breaks. My kids love stopping to do The Machine, for example, where they all jump in and, you know, I call on them one by one. I mean, I also run a drama lunchtime club for a group of 3-4 students and a group of 4-5 students on different lunchtime days. So I'm at a school where there's a lot of interest from the students in drama and there's definitely a strong tradition of it, which helps. But it means that all of my kids, you know, one of our brain break options is to have a drama-themed brain break, and we'll play one of the games that we've played. And that I've taught them over a period of time. And that once they know the game, it's like any routine. It only takes a couple of minutes and it's just something a bit different before we then get back into, you know, sort of the main learning. But it also means they're associating with drama with fun, and often, you know, those different activities, they've got literacy ideas embedded in them depending on, you know, absolutely, what game I'm doing. Yeah. And you just need a few games up your sleeve and then, you know, you're free and clear. So those are two of So I think the last thing that I think is, you know, a useful point in terms of the way that I've approached literacy and incorporating drama, the last term three with my year 5-6 class, I did a novel study on my all-time favorite children's book, The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Juster. It's an absolutely delicious text. So the author plays so much with figurative language in that. He makes it all literal, and there's just lots and lots of double meanings and things that a lot of the jokes come from. So for example, in one of the scenes in the book, or you know, one of the chapters, the three characters are driving along in their little electric car, and they realize they're all making assumptions. So they're like, oh, well, I think this or I think that in their head. And they literally jump out of the car to the island of conclusions. So they literally jump to conclusions. So much fun. And they're asking the character they meet on the island, you know, can we, because they can see the shore, they can see their car in the sea, like they've just got the sea of knowledge in the way. And they say to the character on the island, Canvey, oh, can we swim back to the car? Like, is it safe to swim in the sea? And Canvey's response always cracks me up. Yes, some people can swim in the sea of knowledge all day and still come out dry.
Brilliant.
So the whole book is like that.
I love it.
You know, they travel to main character Milo travels to Dictionopolis, the city of words, where people literally eat their words. Digitopolis, where they mine numbers and the broken numbers are fractions. Okay. It is just so much fun. So that's the novel study that I did. Now, often, you know, a traditional way of getting children to read aloud in a novel is every child reads a line or reads a paragraph and you go around the classroom, and that way everybody's doing it. But when we've got students with reading anxiety, I think, you know, using those dramatic techniques and ideas and having that mindset coming into it, you can do it differently. So the way that I did it, because this novel is filled to the absolute brim with dialogue, I played on that. And the way that I did it was I read the main sections of the text and all of, you know, the descriptive language and things like that. But when it came to the dialogue parts, for every single chapter at the start of the chapter, I said, who would like to read a dialogue part? And so they all got to be different characters, and depending on where we're up to, they got to be the math magician, or they got to be Milo, or Tok the watchdog. And so Tok the watchdog has a literal clock for a body. It's an absolutely fun text, and they just got so into it. But oh my goodness, by the end of term, some of my readers who are, you know, some students who are reading about 50 words a minute in oral reading fluency in year six, you know, that's less than half where they should be, and I'm doing everything possible to move them. And these are not students, you know, they're boys, they're not students who would traditionally read aloud. They're asking to be, you know, characters in the text, and you know, who can they play. And the other thing is, you know, you've got to make it fun. So I bought props for everything. So if you were reading aloud a character, you got to wear the cape or the crown or the tiara or whatever it was, or the hat or the bow tie. You got to wear each of those things. And then of course that's what was going into my readers' theatre as well, where they were playing characters and performing them. So they got really comfortable and familiar with all the characters. And that meant that those students who, you know, some of those students have significant tracking issues and have to use a ruler to be able to follow along with the novel, and they've certainly, I think some of them never read a 300 page novel in their life, that means they've got the opportunity to be successful and to participate in a way that they're having fun as well. They get to dress up. You know, you can bring those kinds of, it's almost like bringing a dramatic mindset into a literacy classroom and doing a novel read aloud. So I think always looking for those places where you can bring those ideas in, because they are just such a natural fit with literacy and developing literacy in students.
Ooh. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for unlocking some ideas for us. And I can't wait to see what you get up to in the future. So we are going to be in touch. But thank you on behalf of all of Drama New South Wales for sharing. And you have been an absolute delight. So thank you.
My absolute pleasure. And I look forward to talking drama with you guys more in the future.
This is a Drama New South Wales podcast hosted by Claire Colebrook. For more Drama New South Wales podcasts, go to our Drama New South Wales podcast channel.